Good afternoon, folks. How's everybody doing? Enjoying the conference so far? Good stuff. Everybody pumped up from NASCAR for tonight? Everybody going? NASCAR? You drinking and driving? I'll stand over here. You drinking and driving or just driving? Good answer. Well, we're going to talk about SQL Server and SharePoint. Some reason those guys are very tightly integrated. For those that are familiar with SQL Server, and SharePoint, and hopefully most of you are. How many people are SQL DBAs in here? All right, how about SharePoint admins, non-SQL people, most of you? How about both roles? How many people got stuck doing that? Yeah, that's what I see, okay. Most often when somebody says, hey, we want you to take on the SharePoint product, and oh, by the way, when you dig into it, you need to know a little bit about DNS, IIS, SQL Server, Active Directory, third-party content, backups, restores, and so they're like, oh man, I wish I hadn't raised my hand like you just did. But so what we're going to talk about is how we can optimize SQL Server 2012 for SharePoint 2013. How many people running SharePoint 2013 so far? Okay, 2010 still? Sevens, anybody seven still? Nice. Three? Okay. 2000, or I don't think it was called SharePoint then. No, okay. How about SQL Server versions, 2012 SQL Server? Cool. 20, was it before it? 8 before that one? All right. And then 5 before that? Nice. Anybody running 2000? I'll go back to 7.0. We got 2000. The cool thing about the title that if I put up here, what we're about to talk about, the reason I'm asking what version of SharePoint you're running and what version of SQL Server you're running, the title right here says Optimizing SQL Server 2012 for SharePoint 23. That easily could say Optimizing SQL Server 2000 with SharePoint 2007. So to get you in here, I didn't put 2000 up there because who would come into a SQL Server 2005 session for SharePoint 2007? But everything we're going to do is going to be applicable to regardless of what integration you have of SharePoint and SQL Server, almost everything. And I'll point out the almost piece when we get to it. So my name's Brian Alderman. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. I have my own company called MicroTechPoint. My website is www.microtechpoint.com, or MTP for short, www.microtechpoint.com. I train, I consult, I write books, and I speak. Last year, I had the fortunate experience of speaking over in Italy, over in Madrid, and over in London. I'm wearing a Fitbit, so I like to walk back and around, back and forth, so my girlfriend and I have a competition. So I get extra points when I walk around back and forth here. So if you see me walking a lot, I'll try to stay away from the speakers now that yell at me. But I'm trying to get my steps in for the day. Some of the stuff we're going to talk about are in my blog. And I'll point out a couple of items. My blog's available on my microtechpoint.com environment. My email address is brian@microtechpoint.com. If you need to reach me afterwards, I just spoke in, I got stuck down in Honolulu last week speaking at a SharePoint Saturday. A couple weeks before that, I was in Virginia Beach speaking at a SharePoint Saturday down there. So I do travel around and speak at SharePoint Saturdays as well as these bigger conferences. I like to do that. I'm actually going to do my first SQL Saturday conference SQL Saturday. I can't use it. It's the first one. I can't even get used to saying it. My Twitter handles are Brian Alderman, all one word, or MicroTechPoint. And I don't tweet every time I go to the bathroom or anything. I just tweet when I'm speaking and what's going on, where I'm traveling, so you guys know I might be in your area if you want to catch a SharePoint Saturday. So I co-authored the SharePoint 2010, the MS Press SharePoint 2010 Administrator's Companion book. And then I also co-authored the SharePoint 2013 Administration Inside Out from O'Reilly. So I'm going to give away three of these. I only have one copy with me, but I'm going to give away three of these. And what I'm going to do is ask you to put your... This is not, everybody probably saw this and thought I was drinking already. If you are interested in winning a book, I'm going to ask you to put your business card in here. I prefer credit cards. Those normally win. But if you just have a business card, you want to drop it in there and just pass it around. And then hopefully it'll be finished by the time I finish up here. And I'll draw a couple names. And what I'll do is I'll either give the one book away for someone here from out of the, how many people are from the United States? So everybody else, can you show hands out of the United States? Okay, all right, cool. So when I give these books away, what I'll do is I'll sign them to your name, whoever wins, and I'll ship them to you. And then if there is someone of the three that's here from out of the United States, I'll probably hand this one to you so I don't have to ship it over to Belgium or something like that. So we'll be giving these books away. Like I said, I only brought one, but I'll make sure I give away three. I enjoy travel. Obviously, this is one of the reasons I do what I do, and I enjoy to play. I enjoy golf. I'm really from Vermont. Everybody heard of Vermont? Does everybody know it's a state from the United States? I have to ask, because when I landed in California once, I got a cab ride, and a guy asked me where I was from. I said, Vermont. He asked me what state that was in. So now I explain it is a state. If anybody watched Friends or Seinfeld, they always talk about going on vacation in Vermont. So it's the 14th state in the country, in case you want to know about that. It's the 8th smallest state in the country. So if, I don't know, trivia question at happy hour or something like that, you can know that. Then I moved to Colorado, and then I moved to Arizona, because like I said, I enjoy golf. When I lived in Vermont, I lived with my parents. This is mom, dad, and myself. That's before I met SharePoint, by the way. Okay, so this is all because of SharePoint. And then I moved to Arizona because I enjoy golf enough. Well, they make the game pretty simple out there. It's a retirement community. So you don't really, the guys lining up to putt. I mean, you can pretty much hit that pretty easily from no matter where you are. But I do enjoy golf. And then the 19th hole was also a favorite hole of mine. Because the cups or the glasses in there are as big as the cups out in the green. Okay, so we're going to talk about SQL. And we're going to talk about SharePoint and why we're concerned about those. For those of you DBAs that are in here, you might be a little bored because I'm going to do an introduction to SQL Server. Just a few slides on what SQL Server is all about. So the first thing we're going to talk about is an introduction to SQL Server, then the integration between the two products. Then I'm going to go into SQL Server and demonstrate some changes that you can make on the SQL Server side that will have a significant impact on the SharePoint side. Now, when you look at some of them, you're going to say, well, that's pretty straightforward. Well, the bad thing is people, when a DBA installs SQL Server, unless they take these steps, their default installation behavior for SQL Server has a huge impact on the SharePoint installation. So we're going to talk about those both at the instance level, and I'll explain what that is in just a moment, and the database level. We're also going to go into a nice topic that I love to talk about, is ginormous transaction logs. Has everybody seen that? Has anybody seen that? You've got a 385 megabyte MDF file and an 11 gigabyte LDF file, right? See, a lot of people have seen that. If you search on the web, it's going to give you some misleading information. I'll just be polite about it. But I'm going to tell you how we can address that. How do we avoid the ginormous transaction log files? And then we'll wrap up with some best practices for optimizing SQL for SharePoint. So the introduction to SQL. How many people know how to spell SQL? All right, so you're familiar with it. That's about all I know of it. Not really, but. Well, SQL Server is an DBMS, a Relational Database Management System. And that's what hosts all of our content from our SharePoint. Multiple instances of SQL Server can be installed on one machine. I can install 50 instances of SQL Server on one box if I want to. All right, that's 50 times a run through setup. I probably wouldn't do that, but I could do that. There's one default instance. The very first time I run that setup program for SQL Server, it's called the default instance. It doesn't have to have a name associated with it. Every other time, to differentiate between the default instance and the other 40 instances, I have to give it a name. So I'll create an instance called SQL for SharePoint. So the named instance would be SharePoint. So I have one default, multiple named instance. Each instance is managed individually. This is very, very important for you to understand. So if I install it, I've got a line of business application SQL Server installation, and my SharePoint admin comes up and says, hey, dude, I need another installation of SQL Server just to host my SharePoint content. They may try to persuade you, hey, we've already got SQL Server out there. Why don't you just use that one? I'm going to show you reasons that you don't want to do that and help you understand what you can explain to them as to why you want your own installation of SQL Server for SharePoint, even if it's on the same box. And if it is on the same box as other instances of SQL Server, now we have other concerns we need to be aware of, and we're going to talk about those as well. So each instance, so I have my line of business application instance, and I have my SharePoint instance. What I do for managing the databases and for managing the instance, they don't affect each other for the most part, okay? I use the same interface for managing that, SQL Server Management Studio, or PowerShell. I use the same interface on the window group on my desktop for managing the multiple instances. So if I've got five instances, I go to the same interface, register the SQL Server environment that I want to work with, and I'll connect to that environment and I'll manage SharePoint. I'll connect to my line of business apps and I'll manage SharePoint. There's two types of databases for every instance of SQL Server. There are system databases, which we're going to talk about, and our user databases. So every time we add a content database or create a new service application, we're creating a user database for SQL Server. Whenever I create a new database, whether it be a system database or a user database, I get two files that are automatically created for me, an MDF, which is a master data file, and an LDF, which is a log transaction file or log data file. And what happens when we're using these is I always have to have these two. And this really the two files are strictly primarily for data recovery, whether it be auto data recovery or backups and restores if we should lose a drive. Okay, so every time I create a database, if I'm in central admin, I go to manage content databases, I create a new one, it's going to create two files out on the drive, one an MDF file and one an LDF file. And we'll talk about what they do. Now, optionally, I may want to expand my MDF file because I'm running out of space. I may want to make more room. So I could extend that MDF file onto another server, or another drive, excuse me, and that would be an NDF file. These are default file extensions. You're not stuck with these, but 99% of the installations I see, they use these. So if someone comes in off the street, they know what these files are used for. So we try to stay consistent with those names when you're working with them. All right, so why do we have two files? Again, it's data recovery. So what happens is when I go into SharePoint and I add content to a list or a library in SharePoint, it actually is going to go out there, it's going to send that insert or a modification or a delete to the SQL server, and then that on there, it's going to load that information, it's going to go out to SQL server, retrieve that, and put it in the buffer cache. That's part of the memory that we're going to talk about with memory allocation. And then it loads it in the buffer cache, and it manages it in that buffer cache. It does the update or the insert inside that buffer cache. And then it writes it into the transaction log. That's the LDF file that I was telling you about. And then roughly 60 seconds later, don't hold me the time, but roughly 60 seconds later, there's a process built in the SQL Server called a checkpoint process. This checkpoint process is the MDF file. What this is going to do is going to write the insert or the update or the delete. It's going to write that to the MDF file. So it's always a two-stage approach if you do an insert, update, or delete. Write me to the LDF file and then write it to the MDF file. That's why we have those two files. We'll talk more about the importance of those two files when it comes to data recovery. But I'll also give you a hint at this point right now. This is one of the reasons that the ginormous transaction logs occur is because we're backing up our MDF files, but we're not backing up our LDF files. And again, I'll expand on that in just a little bit. Now, the bottom of number four says later, checkpoint writes dirty pages to database. Okay, all that means is it's dirty because it hasn't been officially written to the MDF file. So any page that's in the LDF file that hasn't been written to the MDF file is considered a dirty page. I don't know why they call it that, but they do. So that's the transaction log process. We're going to talk about this as we go out through the session, but I want to make sure you understand that's why we need the extra files, the LDF or the MDF, not for data recovery, and this is the way the transactions are written. Now, if I'm just viewing content, if I'm generating report, I don't deal with the LDF file. I just deal with the MDF file for the most part. There might be some dirty pages, depends on what the kind of command you write. But generally speaking, if you're selecting content or retrieving content, you're not going to deal with the LDF file. The LDF is only for the inserts, the updates, and the deletes. All right? Makes sense? Clear as mud? Okay. That's all going to be very important as we go through this presentation. Now, there's another thing that's very important on the databases. In the database, you can, at the options level, you can set it to simple recovery, full recovery, or bulk log. What does that mean? Look at the simple recovery description. Does not permit transaction logs for backups. What that means is when it writes it to the LDF, when it writes it from the LDF to the MDF file, it does some cleaning up for me. It purges that content out, okay? The full database backup recovery model, it actually is going to log. I need to perform a backup of the log, the LDF file, occasionally to avoid that ginormous transaction log situation. Okay, so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about how do I create an environment that allows me to recover data, but how do I avoid the ginormous transaction logs? The third one is bulk log. If you know you're about to insert a million rows and you don't want to have to write to the transaction log, then to the MDF file, you can put it in what's called bulk log operation for a brief moment. Insert the million rows. It'll put in the transaction log a million rows or a million inserts were done, but it's not going to log every one of them, making that operation much faster. So if you put it in bulk log, and you can move around in these, by the way, if you put it in bulk log, you'll want to immediately back up the database so that way you've got the content you just added in here because the transaction logs are not going to help you with that, all right? So the recovery model is another thing that we have to be aware of, and we'll talk about the importance of making sure in production primarily that you want to use the full recovery model for data recovery. When you do use a full recovery model, now your concern is the ginormous transaction logs. So we're going to address that today. All right, SQL Server instance databases. Every instance, so if I have my line of business apps and I have maybe some PeopleSoft software, maybe that's working with SQL Server, and I have my SharePoint, that's three different instances of SQL Server. Every one of them has five system databases. I know we only see three now. They have a master database, which is very similar to the config database in SharePoint. Keeps track of all the configuration information for SQL Server. It has the MSDB database. So your DBAs, they can automate stuff. They get jobs and operators and alerts and replication. All that can be automated. When there's any automation or any type of information like replication is performed, it's in the MSDB database. There's a third one. If you go in, when you go to SQL Management Studio, you're not even going to see it. It's a hidden database. It's called a resource database. It just has information about all of the objects inside of SQL Server. All right? So you won't even see it in the list when you go in there. Now, there's two more system databases. These two are the ones that will have a major impact on what SharePoint does. So that's why I left them for last. There's the TempDB. If we go into a list of items, it's got 5,000 items in it, and I want to shuffle them around. I want to sort them by last name or chronologically. Well, it needs somewhere to store that content while it's doing the slicing and dicing of information. So what it does is stores it in this temporary database, in the table in temporary database, and does that slicing and dicing for me. Every time I restart SQL Server, the good news is that gets flushed out just like in our memory. So if that gets flushed out, there's nothing in there. So when you talk about backups and restores, you don't need to worry about backing up TempDB because it's just a holding area, sliced and diced information, and then that gets returned to you. The model database is used for every time we create a new database. So everything that's in the model database is applied to every new database that I create, every new database. So if I'm a SQL Server DBA and I create a new database, everything that's in the model database goes in there. Size, configuration, auto growth configuration, location of the files, all are applied to that new database. The model, if I'm in Central Admin and I go and manage content databases and I add a database, it's going to take a picture of that model database, a little Polaroid. They still make Polaroids, I don't even know. It's going to use that as the template for creating that database. So by default, when you install those, when you create a new instance of SQL Server, there's some default settings in these databases that aren't optimal for SQL Server or for SharePoint. This is what I want to make you aware of today, is what can we do in the SQL Server world that I can talk to my DBA or talk to myself about. I have a general rule of thumb. Take your DBA out to lunch once a month. If you're the DBA and the SharePoint admin, get the company card, take yourself out to lunch once a month, and write it off as a business expense. And just talk to yourself. It's always really entertaining in a restaurant when you do that. It's really cool if you switch seats, by the way, like you're having a conversation. That makes it more entertaining. Sometimes you'll get a free drink out of it. I don't know. I've heard that. I don't know if it's true or not. But the information we're going to get today is going to allow you to understand what you need to talk to your DBA about to make sure SQL is optimized for your SharePoint installation. All right, so SharePoint SQL Server. Why am I so concerned about SQL Server? Most of us know that 90-ish percent, I think it's 93% of all content of SharePoint content is stored in SharePoint in SQL Server. So 93% of all your SharePoint content is stored in SQL Server. How do I know that? 78.3% of all statistics are made up on the spot. So let's not talk about percentages. I've already told you the good news. The good news is you're not sitting here, man, I wish I was on SQL Server 2012. I'm only on 2010. I wish I was on SharePoint 2008, sorry. I wish I was on SharePoint 2010 or 13, but I'm only on 2010. This is all applicable. There's a one baby thing I'll show you when I get in there that it's not applicable to. It's very straightforward. But everything else that we're going to do when we get in the demo and everything else we talk about, it doesn't matter what version of SQL running or your SharePoint you're running, it's going to be applicable to that. The farm configuration information stored in the config database, we're all very familiar with that, how we need to back that up, and it allows us now to be able to restore that. That was new for us, introduced in a recent version. Central Admin Content Database, if you use the graphical user interface for an installation, what happens to the Central Admin Content Database? Good, huge, good. Okay, so I got to do a poll when I said that. Where are we? We're in Vegas. How many people use the word GUID? How many people use GUID? How many people don't care? The rest. Okay. I find the northeastern part of the country, we use GUID. I'm from Vermont, like I said originally. You get down in the south and southwest, they use GUID more. It's just a poll for me, just trying to figure out with my audience what I should use. So if you go to my blog, www.microtechpoint.com, go under Brian's blogs, there's a blog in there on how to get rid of that GUID/GUID on the Central Admin Content Database, step by step on how to take it offline, how to rename it to something that's more user-friendly and bring it back online without corrupting your database environment or your SharePoint environment. So it can be done. Now, every web application has at least one content database. You create a web application, you know that. Most service applications have at least one database. So that's why it's so important for us. When SharePoint 2010 shipped, the DBA started going bonkers. It's like, because we had the shared service provider in 2007. We didn't have nearly the databases that we have in SharePoint 2010/SharePoint 2013. And we got new ones introduced in 2013, and who knows what's going to happen in 2015, if that's the official version. By the way, don't hold me to that. But all right, so there's a very important tight integration between SQL Server and SharePoint that we need to be concerned with here. So what else we need to put? SharePoint Farm creates several databases. Everybody know what a spousal installation is? How many people have done a spousal installation? It's when you sit there and you say, okay. All right, sound familiar? Thank you. So if you do a spousal installation, you're going to have over 20 databases in there. So try to avoid spousal installations. Back to my DBAs. You don't want to do a spousal installation over there either, because some of the things we're going to talk about, you can nip in the bud and address up front. A database can contain several site collections, but a site collection can only belong in one database. Just a little review of that before we start talking about what we can do. Preventing RPs. Anybody heard of my term for RPE? Resume producing event. Okay, we want to avoid those. I'm going to walk you through some things and best practices. Using full recovery model versus using simple recovery model a bit later on in the session is, to me, a good way to avoid resume producing events, where you do something goofy enough where your boss fires you, and guess what? Your resume's in SharePoint. So be careful about where you store your SharePoint or your copy of your resume in the event that you perform an RPE. The other thing we want to do is the Microsoft SOFLIM recommendation for the size of a database is 200 gigabytes. Now, it's not hard-coded. If you go 201, you call them up, like, dude, are you kidding me? I'm going to put you on hold, laugh at you, and hang up on you. It's not going to happen. It's a soft limit, only really for keeping the size of the transactions in the transactions and the size of the databases for backups and restores, keeping that to a manageable limit. Primarily, if you have a service level agreement, SLA of 4 hours, and you want to recover a database, if it's 200 gigs or less, you should be able to recover that and meet that 4-hour service level agreement. Now, I did some work for a company out of Alabama, and they had their one company that had the issue with 386 megabytes of data and 11.2 gigabytes of an LDF file. But I was working on doing consulting with them, and I was in there on Monday. Tuesday afternoon, he says, oh, by the way, SharePoint's been down since last Thursday, so we might want to look at that tomorrow. So they didn't have a service level agreement, apparently. So you won't have to worry about that. But it's primarily for service level agreements and just minimizing the time it takes to do a recovery. So we're going to look at how we can control that. So we have control. We don't need to go to our DBAs and say, hey, when you create that, or I created this database, can you make sure it never exceeds 200 gigabytes? We can control that as SharePoint admins using site collection quota templates and also using a cap or the maximum number of site collections on a database. So let's walk through this together here. I've got a web app out there, and I want to make sure that I can hold all the site collections that I want to hold, but I need to determine the number of databases that I'm going to need to hold these site collections. So what I've got here, we're going to hold with a Microsoft recommendation of 200 gigabyte databases, and in here we're going to have site collections. So I want to determine the number of site collections I want to put, or maximum number of site collections I want to put in each database, so I don't exceed that 200 gigabytes. Now, I could have one database that's going to hold all my project site collections, my department site collections, my HR. So I could have different databases. In addition to trying to maintain the idea of 200 gigabytes, I could have additional databases for just segregated out for different purposes, HR versus marketing versus projects. Okay, so we come out of one of our 15 meetings a week, and we come out of there, we decide we need 800 site collections. We want to host 800 site collections with 500 megabytes of quota. That's what we're going to give every site collection. So off the top of our head, if we do the math, how many databases would I need if I want 800 site collection with 500 megabytes of quota? So and we're trying to hold the 200 gigabytes. So one site collection is a half a gig, so two site collections is a gig. I need 800 site collections, so what's that, 400 gigs of content, so really it's 200 gigs, two databases. Does that make sense in basic math? But there's a little setting that called the second stage recycle bin for every web app. That's 50% more for every site collection. So now my 500 megabytes by default goes up to 750 unless you've changed that. So now we got to do the math a little bit differently. Now it's, I can't do that in my head, so I threw this here. So now we decide we want to keep about 250 site collections per database. So now that gets me up to about 183 gigabytes per database. So that's why we have four databases here. We're going to put about 183 gigabytes of content with our second stage recycle bin along with our site collection content in each database. So I'm going to need four databases to hold that content. So when you think out of the box, it's like, okay, I just need two databases. When you think about it, if I put 250 site collections in database number one, and then 200 in database number two, that's 500. I still need 300 more. Then I put them in a third one, that's 750, and now I need a fourth database for that other 50. Plus it gives you some room for growth. Now the cool thing is about this, if I do this math up front, what it's gonna do, it's gonna round robin as it populates a database. First site collection, unless I haven't specified, you know, created for specific database or content, like the project sites I only want there, department sites I only want there, you can force a site collection either using PowerShell or the GUI into a specific database. If you really need to do that, you can. But let's assume that we don't. We know we want 800 site collections at 500 megabytes plus our 250 for the second stage recycle bin. So what we're going to do is we're going to do this math here, and we're going to, if we create these databases up front, it's going to round robin. Site collection one goes into database one. Site collection two goes to database two, three, four, then back around to one again. So it'll round robin, keeping those databases the same size. If you've already got a database out there that's already got 500 site collections, and you add a second database, and as long as you don't cap that off, and I'm going to show you how to cap it off shortly here, what it will do, it will just, that first database will not see another site collection until the second database gets its 500 site collections. So it'll automatically push them into that second database for you. So we're going to leave this at 250 site collections is what we want to do to ensure that we don't exceed this along with the site collection quota template. We're going to do that to make sure that we don't exceed that 200 gigabyte soft limit for our content. All right? Okay, questions on this? So if you're using round robin, so let's say for instance the next one I'm using, I want to put it in HR sites. There's about a four command PowerShell that says create database, and you tell it what database you want to put it in. So the round robin approach is good if you're not trying to store specific site collections in a database, but if you've got that flexibility. Otherwise, if you want to persuade a site collection to a particular database, you can do so using a PowerShell command. Or you can do it through the GUI, just by taking the other databases offline. All right. Default file locations. By default, our log files, the LDFs, the MDFs, and the backups all go on the C drive. Thank goodness, right? Because now we don't have to worry about running around trying to find out where they all are. So the good news is they're all on the C drive. That good, right? Anybody see a problem with that? I'm sorry? Yes, it does. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, my hearing aid was up. I got it now, though. So we want to move those off the C drive. By default, guess what? SQL does for you. Puts everything on the C drive in its path all the way down knee deep. We're going to look at that. By default, each instance of SQL Server is an absolute memory hog. It has no regard to any other instance of SQL Server running on that machine, and I'll show you how badly that is when we get into the demo. Max degree of parallelism. Maxed up because it's easier to say for me, is set to 1. If you read online, it's going to say you should set this. So what it's saying is the number of processors on your machine, you want to, let's say we have 24 processors on my machine. I may want to set that higher to take advantage of those processors. Regardless of what you read online, when it comes to SharePoint, always leave that at 1. The way the SQL and Server and SharePoint are integrated, messing with that max stop, trying to set it higher to improve performance is not going to work. So leave your max stop set to 1. And that's just a setting inside of SQL Server. The default is 0. In fact, with SharePoint 2013, it will talk to SQL Server and say, hey, I want to install this. And say, nope, max stop's going to be 1, or I'm not going to let you install and talk to that database. So it does have a safety net built in for you on that. See, collation, so the Latin one. So when I do a standard If I do a spousal installation of SQL Server, not SharePoint, it does not use this collation, and I can't recall what it is, so I'll show you when I get into the demo. But if I go and create a database, I call my DBA up, or I just had lunch with them, it's like, oh, by the way, can you create me a couple of new databases? Because some DBAs will want to create the databases for you. Perfectly fine. But when they do, A, if I have a dedicated instance of SQL Server for SharePoint, they can, during the install, they can set it to Latin 1 general, case insensitive, accent sensitive, kana sensitive, or kana kana sensitive, and wit sensitive. We have to have that collation in the SQL Server installation that's hosting our SharePoint content. Otherwise, when the DBA creates a database, they have to remember to drop it down and create that database using that collation. Otherwise, when I go into SharePoint, he says, Brian, I just created a MTP underscore portal underscore content 1 underscore DB. I go try to connect to it, I'm going to get a collation error. I have to have this collation. So then they're going to have to go back. And by the way, if they've already filed, they can't just redo it. They have to delete the database and recreate it. Or if there's already data in there, let's take it off of SharePoint for a second. If there's already data in there and someone goes and decides they need to change the collation, you have to dump that data file, that all that data out to a file, not back it up because it's going to back up the collation settings. You have to dump that out and then restore that in order for that to work. So make sure, and this is one of the other reasons so far, one of the reasons is to have your own instance of SQL Server for SharePoint. So during the installation of that SQL instance, they can set that up to general CIS, KS, WS, and you don't have to worry about whether they're creating the databases or I'm creating the databases. So we're going to see that in just a second here. So what we're going to do also is we're going to go into the image. So that was SQL Server instance settings. We're going to go into the instance now and look at database settings. We're going to look at the model database and the temp DB. Models are template, remember that. The temp DB is our database file settings. So what we want to do is to look at the default. What we're going to do is look at the default size of the model database and see how that has a negative impact on SharePoint. And we're going to modify that. We're also going to look at the auto growth settings. There's a little gotcha. I'll explain what it is, but I'm going to show you what it does for us and what it doesn't do that it should do for us. And we're going to do the same thing for the temp DB database. Remember, that's our slice and dice database. And that one we're going to put in simple recovery model. I'll explain a little bit more about that. But that database I'm okay with because, remember, that gets flushed out every time we restart SQL Server anyway. And then I want to place these files, that are the LDF and the MDF file, on a different physical drive than or in the SAN or a RAID 5 or RAID 1.0 than where my content databases are. If you're doing a lot of sorts and a lot of slicing and dicing of content, you want to separate those two for performance. So those are some things that we can do to improve performance. Again, we need to be talking to our DBA once a month. The beauty of that, too, is you're planning on rolling out maybe a service pack. Everybody knows Service Pack 1 was just released. I already blogged on it. I have a two-month rule when service packs come out. Cumulative updates or hot fixes. Unless there's something critical on that, I don't install that. My blog already says this. I have 2 months. Unless there's something you absolutely need, let somebody else who has nothing else to do on the weekend work out all the kinks between them and Microsoft. Okay? Then you get the patch version of that service pack, because there probably will be one at some point. And you don't have to worry about spending your weekend troubleshooting it and trying to get everything fixed. Because usually, unfortunately, when you introduce new content or new code, other issues are sometimes introduced. So I have a two-month rule. Unless that's something I absolutely need, I don't roll out a new service pack or a cumulative update hot fix until for 2 months. And you'll see that in the blog if you go up there. Okay. All right, demo time. So let's go here. Remember, I have all my buttons up here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I did that all by myself. We're going to go into my image. And so what we're going to do is we're in Central Admin. You can see this pink thing up here. It's telling me I have issues. For those of you that haven't been in 2013, we still, just similar to 2010, it goes out and looks at problems and tries to provide solutions for you. I mean, quite honestly, when I go in there, I think I've got the best fix that you're ever going to see for this. You go to View These Issues, and you click this box right here. Then you go up to Items and Delete, okay? And then do an OK. Oops, still there. I must have forgot one. I got to refresh, maybe. Oh, there you go. All right. So too much emphasis on troubleshooting. It's that easy to fix that stuff. I don't know why people make a big deal about troubleshooting. But we'll probably have that baby back before we get here. Okay, so let's go into our content databases. And you're going to see I've got MMS. Let me switch this over to my portal. We'll go up here. And you'll see I've got a database in here. Now I have this thing because I'm a SQL guy. You get better performance if you name your databases with an underscore DB at the end, okay? So I always put underscore DB on there for better performance. So inside of here, I'm going to go in and I'm going to do a couple things. We want to go back to our example before. I want no more than 250 site collections in here. So I'm going to fix this one because you can see by default it's 5,000. So we're going to click on this. We're going to say I want a warning at 200. And then I want this guy to only take 250 site collections. And then I'm going to do an OK. So that's going to go in. It's going to set that so not to allow 250. So now I need to create another database. So I'm going to do this from inside of SharePoint. And I haven't done anything inside of Squeal yet, but I will. And I'm going to call this MTP underscore portal 1 underscore content and good performance DB. But we need to change these settings. These all need to be 250, 250, and doing OK. So I can do that two more times, but I'm going to stop there because I want to show you what I'm doing is not as helpful as I'd like for it to be for me. So this is going to create this. It shouldn't take too long. I like the new verbiage that they have in SharePoint 2013. It's more relaxing. Okay, this shouldn't take too long. Okay, we're working on that for you. Okay, so it's nice that they have these nice subtle messages so you're not beating up your machine like we did in previous versions. So you're going to see while that's cooking here, we'll go into SQL Management Studio. If you haven't been in there, this is the interface our admins use for SQL DB admins use. And you'll see in the databases here, I've got several databases already in here. We'll refresh. Come up here, right-click, and hit refresh. And we should have there's our portal content, portal one content database that we just created. So it easily, quickly added that. So I'm going to show you some issues with that, but I just want to show you. It's that easy for us in Central Admin to go out and create a database. All right, let's switch gears. Let's talk about SQL Server, why you guys are here today, is to see. We know, now we've got a better idea on how they're integrated. What do we need to be concerned about when we have lunch with our DBAs or with ourselves, depending how we're working with that? So the first thing that we're going to look at is the location of the files. All right. So I'm going to go to properties for the instance. Now remember, if I'm in here and I've got an instance for line of business apps, I've got another one for PeopleSoft, I've got another one for SharePoint, I'm going to have three sets of these. I'm going to have three options here. I'm going to have one right here that's the default. You notice it doesn't have a name. I'll have another one that's similar, but it's going to say SharePoint on it. Another one that's got LOB on it or PeopleSoft on it. And I'll just connect to the instance that I want to work with. So we're going to come in here. We're going to connect. We're going to make sure we're using our SharePoint admin, our instance. And we're going to go to database settings. And you're going to see the default settings for the data file, the MDF, the log file, the LDF, and the backup file are all the same close to the same directory. We scroll out to the end, you're going to see it's on the C drive in data for the data file. It's on the C drive in data for the log file. And fortunately, they moved it to the backup directory on the C drive for the backup files. Thank you. So, but this is badness, right? This is on the C drive. Now, this image I have only has one drive on it, so I'm going to ask you to close your eyes, pretend with me. Don't close them too long because I don't want you falling asleep. But we're going to change this so that instead of putting this here, we're going to put this in a directory that already has to exist. I'm going to put this one in the SQL. I don't know what that did. I fat-fingered. I'm going to put that in C colon. Let's pretend that C colon is a D. C colon or SQL data. And again, pretend that's a D. And then we're going to put our log files on another drive. Right, and that's going to be L colon SQL logs. And then we're going to put our backups on probably a network share or something like that because we don't want those in the same machine. We're going to put this one SQL backups. Now, if you're in SQL Server 2008, you're not going to have that bottom box for backups. That's one difference you'll see in 2008. You can change a log and data. Also in 2005, but the backup option didn't come out until 2012. So we're going to change that location. The other thing we're going to do at the instance level is we're going to go into and we're going to look at properties again. And we are going to go to memory. So this is one instance of three. By default, this instance of SQL Server has 2,147,483,647 megabytes allocated to it for this instance. That's 2 billion some odd. How many people have that much of RAM on any of their machines? Well, I didn't think so. But the way SQL Server works is that it will, if this guy's first one in wins, if this guy comes in, and let's say that was set to 4 gigs, this guy comes in, it takes all the RAM, the other instance comes in, starts to work, sorry, dude, I got nothing for you to work with. And if you happen to have SQL Server and you have to have an Exchange on there or something like that, hopefully you don't, Exchange will have nothing for memory. So by default, every instance of SQL Server has, you have to address the maximum memory option here. So you can drop this down to say, well, for this instance, we're going to say we're going to give this 4 gigs, so 4096. So we'll give it 4096. We'll do this for this instance. We'll do this for the SharePoint instance, the line of business instance, well, every instance out there. You got to do it for every instance, because otherwise, if you just do it for two of them and that third one doesn't have a ceiling on it, guess what it's going to do? It's going to hog it all. So you want to make sure every one of them have a cap or ceiling on them. Now, the other thing you can do is also set a minimum server amount for this instance or per instance. The minimum is similar in the sense that it will not drop below. Now, this does not mean it's going to allocate. If I set this to 3072, 8292, is that right? Close enough. 3072. What this will do is, as this instance requests memory and builds up, when it hits 3072, it won't release it. Okay, it'll never drop below. But if I restart SQL Server, it's not going to say, here, SQL Server instance, you know, default instance, here's 3 gigs of RAM. It's not going to just give it to them, but once they hit that, it's not going to drop it below. So there's not this give and take that's going on. It's going to get it down up to, once it exceeds 3072, it won't drop below that. And, but it won't go above 4096. Now, you could set them to both. So with a 4096 for memory for a minimum and 4096 for a maximum. And that way, that amount of RAM will be dedicated to it once it hits it, if you want to. I usually just leave a little wiggle room of it, so that way I can give, if there's another instance of SQL Server that needs that RAM, they have the option for getting that RAM. So that's another thing that you want to change at the server level. Okay, so something else you can have a conversation out. So we've changed the memory, we've changed the location. Remember, what's the database that we use to create every new database? Model, exactly. So let's go take a peek at that by default. We're going to right-click and go to Properties, and we're going to go to Files. And this is just the model database. And what this is showing me is that the initial size for this is 3 megabytes. That's for the MDF file, and 1 megabyte for the LDF file. If it needs to grow, it's had what's called an auto growth setting on. So what's going to happen here? If this is truly 3 megabytes and I want to upload a 10 megabyte file, this is what's going to happen. It's going to come in and say, dude, you said 3. You've already used 2, so I have 1 left. Now you're trying to stuff a 10 megabyte file in there. Thank goodness you have auto growth turn on. So now he's like, all right, so you have 1 left. I'm only short 9. So I'm going to take that 1 and I'm going to go in there. I'm going to consume that 1. So now I'm only short 9, excuse me. Now it's going to grow by a megabyte. So it's going to stop, like, whoa, time out. It's going to grow a megabyte. Add that other megabyte of content. It's going to stop again and grow. It's going to grow 8 times to accommodate that 10 megabyte file. All right? We obviously don't want to do that because that's a performance issue. So out of the box, the model database is just not optimal for content to be added. It's nice that the auto growth is turned on. We're not going to get an error message saying you can't add any new content. But every time I go to add content, if we're talking with larger files and even the 10 megabytes, every time I add new content, it's going to stop and do those baby steps for it to grow. So two things we want to address here is let's not make that initial size in the model so small, so that way whenever I create a new database, I don't have to worry about the auto growth. The auto growth should only be there as an insurance policy, right? Only if it has to grow, because I don't want to prevent anybody from doing their work. So we should set the initial size to a size that will accommodate the content that we expect to go in there. And if the auto growth has to grow, we don't want to do it in baby steps. We want to do it larger steps. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the model database, and we're going to bring this up to, say, 500 megabytes that we want it to be at. And then we're going to change this here. So it's usually 10 to 25% the size of your data file is your log file. I always do 25%. So we're going to go 125 here. And then instead of doing the baby steps auto growth, we're going to change that. So if it needs to stop and grow, what did I say, 500? I'm going to let it grow at 250 megabytes. So it stops and it grows, and I know when it's done that it's not going to stop and do it again. And I'm going to do the same thing with the log file. Notice this is in percent versus megabytes. I like to use megabytes because I know exactly how long it's going to take me 13 nanoseconds for this auto growth process to take place when it needs to take place. If it's relative to the size, like a percent, It could take me 13 nanoseconds or 2 minutes, and I wouldn't know that because the database is the size of the file that it needs to grow. So we're going to switch this to megabytes, and we'll have this grow in increments, we'll say, of 50 megabytes. All right, then we'll do an OK. The path we don't need to worry about, it's going to pick up the path from the SQL Server setting that we already have. So even though it's showing up here, we don't need to worry about that. So we're going to make an attempt to make our new databases. This is only applicable to new databases. That one, that portal one that I just created, it's already taken its Polaroid picture of a model database. It's not going to help that one. I would have to go in and fix that. So let's go fix our portal one. We're going to go in here. We're going to right-click and go Properties, and then go Files. And you'll see, because there is content out there, that it brings tables that it needs in. You'll see that it's brought some tables in. So now we've got 25. We've got the 1 megabyte growth that we've shown you, and the 10%, and the location. This won't pick up actually until I restart SQL Server, so I'll need to do that to show you that path. But so this is the one we created before we did started this demonstration of how to fix stuff. So let me just if I wanted to fix that, I would just simply click in here. What is it, 500? Change that to 500, and then change this one to 125. So if the file already exists, you need to come in here and fix the existing ones, or update. It's really not a fix, depends how you look at it, I guess. And set these guys to be more of an appropriate size here. What do I do over here, 75, 50? I don't remember what. They don't have to be the same, by the way. They can, if you've got one database that, what do I do here? 75. Oh, limited, okay. All right, so let's go ahead and do an okay on that. So we just changed that portal one now. Because the model, the changes we make the model are not going to be applicable to any existing databases. So we have to go in and make those changes afterwards. Okay, so that's good. Now let's go back to, I'm going to do this first. Let's go right here in SQL. I'm going to right click. Let's say my database, my DBA wants to create databases. I'm going to do new database. Here's my 500 that we put in there, and 125, and 250, and 50, and my SQL data, and my SQL logs. So now when I create a new database from inside a SQL Server, my new settings for optimization are in place. I've got a larger initial size, I've got a larger auto growth, and I've taken them off the C drive because we have our fake D colon SQL data and our fake D colon SQL log file. So I'm going to go ahead and create this over in SQL Server, and I'm going to call this badness. Of course, we're going to put DB on it for performance. Why am I calling this badness? Anybody know what's wrong with this file, with this database I just created inside a SQL Server? I don't know who said it, but that's correct. It's collation. Remember, this is the default setting for SQL Server is let's go see what it is, because I can't remember off the top of my head. Let's go to, but there's a default. If we did a spousal, that default. It's this guy right here. SQL, Latin 1, General, CP1, CIAS, okay? So I'm going to go try to use badness over here. Let's go back to SharePoint, add a content database, badness_DB. It's not going to work, but I'm going to do the right thing by making sure that these are correct, 250. Doing OK. And whoops, sorry, something wrong here. I don't know what you're talking about. This collation is not what we need from SharePoint. So it's going to yell at you. And the cool thing is, convincing your DBA to having your own instance of SQL Server, they install it with the correct collation. They can run a script that runs and creates this database, and they don't have to worry about the collation. All right, so let's go back here now. So, let me show you something. Let's go back in. Let's stay in here in Central Admin. So I go this way. See, those guys came back. So I'm going to add a content database here now. And I'm going to call this MTP portal 2_content_DB, 200 and 250. So we get everything's under control for site collections. So this is going to go out, going to talk to Squeal, create the database for me. It's sending a script over from SharePoint. So it's telling it, even though the default setting of the collation is not accurate, SharePoint's telling SQL, oh, by the way, when you create this database for me, I need it with the LAT1 general LAT1 CISKSWS, whatever all those letters were. But we're going to see something here. You saw that when I created a database inside a SQL Server, it all worked. It picked up my locations, it picked up my auto growth, and it picked up my initial size. You also saw, though, that because I didn't specify the collation during the install or when I create the database, that it, we had an issue from the SharePoint side. So let's go over to Squeal here. We're going to go over here. Let's do a refresh. If you right-click in databases, we'll do a refresh. Here's our portal 2 that we just created. And here's our properties for that. Here's our correct collation. That's goodness. Here's our file. Check this out, though. Now, there's really only one issue here. First off, I forgot to start SQL Server. So that's why I didn't pick up the new path. Otherwise, that would be fine. And I can restart SQL Server in a second. The other thing you need to be aware of, even though we changed the model database, and inside of SQL Server, you talked to your DBA, you had lunch, he came back, he said, dude, I fixed model database, I've got a new initial size, I've got a new auto growth for you, and I changed the location. Beauteous. And he tested it inside of SQL Server. Now, we go create a database inside of SharePoint, look what it ignored. It ignored the auto growth. So apparently, there's a script that comes over that overrides the model database settings in SharePoint, or in SQL Server, sorry. Okay, so if the DBA says I've got everything fixed for you, it's not necessarily true because now, because I created the database from inside of SharePoint, the auto growth setting did not get picked up. So now whenever I create a new database inside of SharePoint, I need to call my DBA up and say, dude, can you fix this for me and change that auto growth setting? So he's going to test it or she's going to test it. It's going to look good and look good, smell good, taste good inside of SQL Server. But when you get over to SharePoint, because it's coming from SharePoint, it doesn't work. So be aware of that little gotcha on that deal. Okay, so to review this a little bit here. If the DBA creates the database for you, make sure they use the right collation. If you create the database, then the DBA needs to go in and update the auto growth settings here. Yes. So we created the database in SharePoint, you said, I'm sorry, is that correct? Okay. The default, so they did a default installation of the database. No, TempDB won't be happy. Let's jump over here real quick so I can actually show you instead. So it's okay right there because TempDB is not SharePoint specific, it's SQL specific. So TempDB will handle any information. It's just slicing and dicing. So SharePoint won't bark at TempDB because it's just a holding area while it does the slice and dice. But if you create additional ones, my recommendation is because it probably will be, I would think you would get a little bit better performance if it was already of the correct collation. So if you create additional ones like we suggested, I would try to create them with the correct collation, the SharePoint collation. Best practices, and we're going to say that, best practice is to install SharePoint, a SQL Server instance for SharePoint with the correct collation, and go in and make these settings changes that we just made in here. Okay, so we need another database over here to get our 4 databases here. To go back to our previous example. So we're going to call this MTP portal, _ content. I forget where I left off. 3 to be safe, because I'm not sure. And we'll set these guys up at 200 and 250. So now that scenario that we talked about earlier of creating 4 databases to maintain our 800 site collections at 500 megabytes of content, 250 megabytes if the default setting for the second stage recycle bin, we've created that environment. We've also improved performance because now the initial database is creating right now will have that larger size, initial size. It won't have the auto growth settings. We need to call our DBA up and say, dude, could you change that auto growth setting for us? It will have the correct locations. We also modified the memory to make sure that each instance of memory has a specified amount of memory associated with it, so there's not one instance of SQL Server that's hogging all of that memory. So those are the changes that we made inside of SQL Server. I'm trying to get this last one shown for you here. You can set up databases to use file stream. Yes, you can. Oh, from the model database? No, I think it's an instance setting, so you can set it up there, though. Okay, so we have our four databases with 250 site collections at the maximum for us that we have available to us. Okay, this thing goes to a 430, is that correct? All right, let's jump back out to slides here for a sec, because we want to address the ginormous transaction logs. Because that, I mean, I see that everywhere that I go. Avoiding ginormous transaction logs. So let's talk about what causes them. So we talked earlier about the whole transaction log process. Remember, I make a change in SharePoint, writes it to the buffer cache, which gets written to the transaction log. This checkpoint process, 60 seconds later, roughly, comes along and writes it to the MDF file. Okay? Now, if I use simple recovery model, notice in step four, I don't have a, or do I? I don't know. This isn't my remote. Oh, I do, right there. In step four, it says flushes over here. Over there somewhere, there you go. So later, checkpoint writes 30 pages. So that simple recovery model, every 60 seconds, assuming that's what the checkpoint process setting is, it's going to take those transactions, it's going to write them to the MDF file, and it's going to flush that for you. So that if you look up online and say, how do I avoid ginormous transaction logs? I would look for large because a lot of people don't use ginormous. But it's going to say, put your databases in simple recovery model. Please don't do that. Why? It's because you're going to flush that out every 60 seconds. And I'm going to show you why that's badness in just a second. Now, if we compare that to the full recovery model, notice the big word down there, the bolded word, is retains those transactions. That's how we get in trouble, though, because we never flushed out the transaction log. So if people put simple recovery model, it will fix that problem with ginormous transactions. But it's going to cause you all sorts of data recovery problems. So we can't do that. So what are we going to do? How do we fix it? So how do we set it so we can, we've got full data recovery up to the minute, hopefully, and but avoid the ginormous transaction logs? It's our backup strategy. So let's introduce a backup strategy. We have three types of backups that we can primarily use. We're going to stay with those three. A full backup, which means absolutely everything gets backed up. We're going to do that every Sunday night for this for these content databases. Now, on Monday, we're going to do a differential backup. A differential, another word for differential, is cumulative. What it's going to do is on Monday night, when I do a backup, instead of backing up absolutely everything, it's only going to back up the changes for Monday. The way I say that, the reason I said it was cumulative is because on Tuesday it's going to do another backup, but it's going to back up all the changes from Monday and on top of that all the changes from Tuesday, hence the word cumulative. Guess what it's going to do Wednesday? Monday, then Tuesday, then Wednesday. Why do I want to do this? It's because when I need to go do a restore, I don't want to have to do four restores because I could simply have gone a full backup on Sunday, an incremental or a transaction log backup on Monday, another one on Tuesday, another one on Wednesday. Now when I'm getting ready to recover, guess what I need to do? Restore the full from Sunday, incremental from Monday, then Tuesday, then Wednesday. Now instead of four restore operations, we only have two restore operations. The full, at this point, I should say, the full and the differential, okay? So the recovery process, a full recovery model, allows us to work deeper. So right now we've got a full backup on Sunday night, and our Wednesday night differential backup has all of the changes up through Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Okay, Thursday comes along. Thursday about 4 p.m., we lose the master data file that's on a separate drive. And we're smart DBA / SharePoint admins, and we don't have simple recovery model on. So all the transactions that took place Thursday, if I was in simple recovery model, what would I be able to back up from Thursday? Nothing. There's nothing there. Every 60 seconds, that thing is getting flushed. Because we're smart, we're using full recovery model. All my transactions for Thursday are still there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go get those first. I'm going to issue a command similar to this. It's backup log with a no recovery. And you'd also probably use a no truncate. That's not the full command. But what I'm doing is taking a snapshot of what's in that transaction log for Thursday. All right, I'm going to do that first. The second step I'm going to do is I'm going to restore the full backup from Sunday. All right, so now we're starting a recovery process. What am I going to do next? Wednesday's differential, exactly. We're going to restore the differential backup from Wednesday. Okay. Now, if I'm in simple recovery model, I'm toast. I'm done. There's nothing else I can do. But we're not. We were able to back up that content in step number one. So step number four is going to be able to restore that log that we just backed up an hour ago before we started the recovery process, and that will recover the content up to 4 p.m. So you want to avoid simple recovery model and production databases. No matter what they say online, it's not inaccurate for them to say, put it in simple recovery model, you won't have any issues with giant enormous transaction logs. But look what we just lost. We just lost a day's worth of work if we had that in simple recovery model. And to me, that should be an RPE, a resume producing event. If I was a CIO, I'm like, really, you're dumping all our transactions out? What were you doing that for? After you get it fixed, grab that little white box that's outside your office and come and see me. And don't forget to put your belongings in there. So that, to me, is an RPE, a resume-producing event by doing it. So what do? We've got our content. We've got a good backup solution in place, but we still have that problem of our transaction log getting too full. At what point in this process am I least concerned about what's in my transaction log? After the full backup, I think someone said. If you did, thank you very much. After the full backup. So Sunday night, after I do a full backup, I'm not as concerned about what's in my transaction log. I just took a picture of everything. I've got everything in a backup file right now. I've got my original data file, and I've got a picture of it in a backup file. So we're going to throw another command into our job. Remember, they write there's the MSDB database, so this is all automated. Okay. So they have a first step on Sunday night is going to be a step that says backup this job on success. It's really a drop-down. On success, if that's a successful full backup, then run this command. This is the command that avoids the ginormous transaction logs. If you don't do a backup log statement, your transaction log will continue to grow until you run out of disk space. Now, the way that it's worded, if you look up instead of backup log, if you do a backup database statement, if you read the wording, it says it backs up the database and the log file. It's a little misleading. It's not inaccurate, again, but it's misleading. What we need to do is two things. We need to back up the transaction log in order to purge those out. That's what we're not doing, because everybody sees, oh, it's backing up the transaction log. It's never going to get ginormous. It's not true. What's happening is, let's say my backup on Sunday night started at 5 p.m., and it went until 10 p.m. When it starts at 5 p.m., it looks this little tick mark. It puts it in the transaction log, starting backup at 5 p.m. At 10 p.m., when it ends, it comes back and puts another tick mark in there. So when the backup of the data file completes, it jumps through the transaction log and says, okay, where's the beginning tick mark and where's the end tick mark? Give me those 5 hours of content and write those transactions to that backup file I just created. So that way your backup is current as of 10 p.m. instead of 5 p.m. But it's not doing this dude right here. The backup log is what you're going to use to avoid the ginormous transaction logs. This is what you need to do. Don't use simple recovery. Talk to your database administrator and say, look, I've got this problem. I see it all the time. I've got this problem, and I'm getting too large of transaction logs. I mean, gigs and gigs and gigs of content that I don't need. I think I already posted this. How many people have seen this already, ginormous transaction logs? If you haven't, just remember this today. You will see it at some point, especially if you're in consulting. I've got a log out there. What if it's too late? I can't just simply go out there and switch this over. I've got a log on how do you fix the problem. If you've already got a 385 megabyte MDF file and a 5 gigabyte LDF file, I've already got a blog out there on how to get it fixed, and then you've got to implement this strategy here to make sure it doesn't happen again. Okay? And there's some DBCC commands, or the database consistency checker commands, that you can use to purge out that information, get that transaction log shrunk down, and free up that disk space. Okay? All right, any questions on that? I should have time for some Q&A after this. We have just a couple more slides. All right, best practices. Somebody asked for that. I had a slide just for you. I'm glad you were here, man. Like those fancy. Did you know PowerPoint can do that? Isn't that cool? I saw that. I'm like, that is sweet stuff. I got to learn this PowerPoint thing. Okay, what do we want to do? Let's review a little bit. Dedicated SQL Server instance or a complete server. No spousal installations of either SQL or SharePoint. And if your DBA is like, cool, dude, I'll get you a new instance of SQL Server just for SharePoint, talk to them, have the conversation with them about it. Say, by the way, you know, this bald-headed guy in Vegas was telling me about how you should be doing setting the max file size and auto-growth settings and all that stuff. Make sure that you address that. Database sizes should not exceed 200 gigabytes. That's a soft limit, all right? And that's strictly really for recovery purposes and to expedite the backup and restores of your content. Max degree of parallelism. with SharePoint and SQL Server, just with those two, leave it at one. All right. Modify the model system database and the TempDB database for those database settings, the initial size and the auto growth. Remember, if I create a database from inside of SharePoint, the auto growth is no good to me. So remember that though. Avoid auto shrinking databases. I see people do this. They'll actually go out, they'll turn on auto growth. They don't set the size of their databases high enough. So the database spends all day growing as people are adding content. And guess what they do tonight? They do an auto shrink. So they shrink it back down. Guess what tomorrow does? Grow all day again. So avoid doing an auto shrink. Now, you may import a bunch of data, and the database gets you to 5 gigs, and you only need a gig. You can use that dbcz command to shrink that down and get it back under control. All right? Use database auto growth sparingly. In other words, stay with that. Remember, that should just be an insurance policy. There's overhead whenever it needs to grow. Remember, 13 nanoseconds, 15 nanoseconds, but there's still some that. Plus, if you don't use auto growth, you get less fragmentation and improves that performance for the data when you're adding data. Spread your data files across log files. So notice my MDF, my LDF, I put them on separate physical drives, folks. You've got to remember to do that. Because if I lose my MDF file and I'm not in simple recovery, I've got my drive that contains all my transactions still. Or use RAID 5 or 1.0. If you do a lot of slicing and dicing of content, create a TempDB on multiple drives, other than where your content database is on it. So you get better performance because you're a controller. If you are one of those people, raise your hand and says, how many people got stuck being or are the DBA and the SharePoint admin? You may not be very familiar with SQL Server. There's a really neat wizard out there called a database maintenance plan wizard. All right? And walk through that. It asks you about backups and where you want to store them, how often you want to back them up, the type of backups, what kind of reports that you want to generate, how often do you want to delete the backups, how often do you want to delete those reports. Run that wizard just to get your hands around something. And in that wizard, make sure at least once a week, depending on how much data you're adding, you get a backup log statement in there. That's going to avoid those ginormous transaction logs. Run a defrag on your drives that contain your content databases occasionally. Just like anything else, if you're doing a lot of inserts of large database or items and then you delete them, you do more, it's going to cause problems for you. Perform regular backups of your database and the database, the transaction logs. And again, we've seen why that's important. Perform dbcc check db database. So there's a few different commands. I didn't decide to list all of them out. But what this does, it goes out and checks the integrity of the database. It looks at for pages that might become corrupt. And it tries to fix those. So dbc check db is one of them. There's a couple other ones with that. That's the main one I want you to run. And by that wizard, even part of doing your backups, there's an option in there for verify integrity. Run that if you've got time for during the backups that are running at 2 o'clock in the morning. Just say no to simple recovery model because we want to avoid ginormous transaction logs. But the flip side of that, we want to be able to do the data recovery up to the minute if possible. And as you saw, you can't do that if you have simple recovery model because those guys get flushed every time that they run through there. All right, before we go there, questions? Yes, we got a bunch. Bring them on. Okay, yep. Okay, so let me repeat what he said. First off, for those of you that I know you have to go on, another, thank you for attending, and I appreciate if you fill out the evaluations. Thank you. So this gentleman pointed out a couple things that are a little more in-depth, but a couple things. Auto-create statistics, there's overhead involved with that. I won't get into the idea of fill factor, but pretty much it's used when you create indexes. Indexes improve performance for retrieving content. They slow it down a little bit when you're adding content, but you can improve that performance when you're adding content by decreasing that fill factor. Okay. So he's suggesting there's a server policy called auto create that you'll want to turn on, so that with that auto growth that's taking place, there's no impact. Yeah, there's no conflict. That's the word I was looking for. Yes, sir. Okay. I'm sorry, there's microphones right here or here. I was trying to repeat it for you, but it sounds like you, yeah.
So I have an age-old argument.
It's not working. I can't hear it anyway, so sorry.
Okay, so I have an age-old argument with my infrastructure team where I have asked for multiple volumes of the NDF files, or let's say the content database is in one location, all the files in another location, different volumes.
Right. I'm not hardware knowledgeable enough to say that they're totally incorrect. The big thing is you want to make sure that you can be able to do this, however you choose to do it or they choose to do it, is always be able to get to your LDF separate from your MDFs, whether or strike the information. So if I lose one of the drives, I've got the information from the other drives to be able to recover that. Okay? So as long as you've got one of those two options in place, the key thing is to make sure you save your transactions.
For working with SharePoint as many years as I have, it's always just been best practice to separate the files out for drive.
I think it's the easiest way, to be honest with you, but some people like more advanced data storage options. And I think there's a session on data storage for SharePoint. I don't know what day it is, but you may want to check the track on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I'm all for that. The age-old thing is that you would separate the files out for organizational purposes and performance. Their overall argument was that there is no performance gain. That's the argument.
Right. Get closer.
I'm sorry?
Excuse me.
Can someone else ask a question?
Yeah.
Next question.
Yeah, how do you control that full recovery model on your production SQL?
Sorry?
How do you control setting a full recovery model on the production SQL server?
So it's an option right inside of SQL Management Studio. I didn't give away the books yet, you guys. I get it. Go into here?
Because it won't do that by default from SharePoint, right?
By default, it takes the model. So if you tempt the model, if you change the model, that's badness.
I'm talking about the recovery model.
Right in there.
Full recovery model versus simple.
It's right there, options right here.
We can't see your screen.
Oh, sorry. Five. Coming back. So right click on the database, go to options,
right.
And it's right there under options.
Okay.
By default, it's going to pick up model. So if someone accidentally sets model simple, that's bad news.
Oh, you can set that in the model, and then it'll use that for all databases.
It will pick up.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Hi. I have two questions for you. One is the Mac server memory setting.
Yes.
As a good DBA, I always try to follow the best practices. Anytime I set the max memory to a certain memory level, when I look at the task manager, it's always higher than what I have set it to.
So the amount of memory consumed is always higher than what your setting is?
So if I set it to like 4 gigs for SQL Server max memory, if I look at the task manager, it's always like 5 gigs or maybe a little higher.
Does it clear when you restart SQL? Does it clear when you restart SQL and then it builds back up again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's close to what I said, but it never is like a hard.
I'm going to use the infamous term memory leak because if it continues to grow over a period of time, I would try to check to see what's causing it to grow. How much? I mean, I don't know. Is there a lot of input and output going on? A lot of data, OLTP versus analytical?
Yes.
Yeah. So my guess is I would try to add more RAM. To be quite frankly, I'd try to get more RAM on the machine, and then monitor that because it sounds like you're peeking out on that. But I would see what kind of transactions are causing the RAM to be consumed.
I have one more question.
Sure. tax management bytes? I'm sorry. Oh, it's a task manager. Yeah, is that's in bytes versus megabytes? That's in bytes versus MBs. So make sure you're doing that math.
Okay.
Okay.
One more question: is it a recommended practice to defrag the drives on a virtual SQL server?
Defrag? Ooh, that's a tough one. Defrag a drive on a virtual SQL server? You can do it. I don't see why you can't do it. I don't know if you're using Hyper-V or VMware.
VMware.
I'm using VMware. I've done it. I mean, I just do it. I back everything up and I do it, but I've done it.
Do you see like performance benefits out of that?
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Right, thank you. Yeah, and I'm running older. I'm only on 8 or something like that. So, yes, sir.
On the host header web applications, I was on a site recently where they got lots of root site collections that had the host name site collections on separate content databases. There was a bit of a performance issue. Didn't know if that was expected behavior. Would it be better just to move them all into the same database?
Is there any reason they separated them?
So they created the host header web application, created 4 content databases, and just left it content 01, 2, 3, 4. So when somebody went in, when people started doing like my site creations, they literally just, load balance across them all.
Right.
But the ones on the 3 other content databases, those my sites seem to load really slow compared to the ones that were on the same content database as the root site collection.
As long as you don't exceed the 200 gigabytes, and I don't see a reason why, sometimes there's political or there's security reasons why they want in their own separate databases.
Yeah.
If that's not there, I don't see a reason why you couldn't combine them. Take backups of the ones that you have now in the event it doesn't really increase or improve what you're hoping to improve. But and then you can roll back to it if you wanted to.
Okay. Yeah, it didn't seem like it would be expected behavior. I thought I'd just check. Cheers.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey. Yeah. Microsoft has a lot of throttling built in to prevent problems on the SQL server.
Yeah.
But they missed quite a few.
Yeah.
For example, if somebody re-inherits permissions on 1,000 items in a list, it'll spawn off 1,000 stored procedures, each issuing a block.
Yeah.
And it just brings the whole thing to its knees till it finishes. And usually I just go in and delete them all, and whatever they did didn't happen.
Right.
I haven't looked at SQL 2012. There's no way to do that in 2008 R2. Is there anything that can, in SQL 2012, that I can set to prevent just literally thousands of stored procedures from being generated, each issuing a block?
It seems like there is a setting.
Rewriting the stored procedures, which
yeah.
I do, by the way.
If you would email me, I believe there is a setting in SQL. I just can't recall it right now.
Okay.
Brian at Microtech Point, and I'll follow up on you on that one.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Hi. Well, we set up our SharePoint database without the file stream option, as it was usually mentioned for documents and that stuff. Now my users want to store videos. And I wonder if I can set up a content database and put on file stream on that one within the same instance.
What
is that possible?
What size are the videos going to be? I mean, they're talking. Honestly, I would look at remote blob storage.
I think that's up to 4 gig.
Yeah, I would look at something like that. I would look at not storing them in a table in SQL Server, more of a remote blob storage configuration.
But
so what version of SQL are you running?
2012.
Okay, good.
So can I put up a separate content database and just do a file stream on that?
Yep, exactly. So what I would do is...
Without affecting the original content database.
Right, so when you create the database, I believe it's a setting on the database. I can't remember where it is in here. And then, so create a content database just for the videos, and I would put them in a separate site collection, and then put that site collection in that database, and then set up file streams on that.
But I think the file stream option has to be set for the instance, doesn't it? It's just in the database?
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah, it's actually right there.
Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Hi, thank you.
We've been backing up our databases using maintenance plans, but we're moving to DPM. Now,
okay.
I know DPM doesn't like maintenance plans running at the same time, because obviously that's going to corrupt the chain that we've
right.
got there.
Okay.
Does DPM do that trimming down of my LDF files?
Well, as long as somewhere in DPM, as long as you have an option to back up the log, it
yep.
can't be a backup database. You've got to get a backup log statement regularly run. as long as you can do that within DPM. I'm not very familiar with DPM, but that's the trick for that piece right there.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Why do you perform log backups only once a week? Because when you do every day in the night a differential backup, the log backup is enormous for a heavy loaded server. I think it's best to do a log backup within it just before the differential backup, because then if you overlap and you save space. Is this
but what if you lose the data? What if you lose the database? What if for some bizarre reason the backup?
Then you have the full backup from the weekend, and then apply the differential backup. For example, the fourth was on Wednesday or something else.
That is another option. So the suggestion is, instead of doing the backup log after the successful full database, you could run the backup log before that instead of afterwards. So that way it doesn't have to back up that section of the transaction log. I'd say it's an option. I won't pick holes into it or anything like that, but I like the idea of knowing I've got a full backup in my hand before I delete my transactions. I'm not saying it wouldn't be a bad thing or a horrible thing, but I just am more confident in knowing. Now, if you've got 200 gigabyte transaction logs that are going to take you 10 times longer, it may be wiser to back up the transaction logs. But then, again, my concern is, what if that backup fails? Then you have to roll back a whole week and go through the whole restore process.
Yes, you
entirely.
Can keep the old transaction log backups too. Then you can apply once from. You have the same, I think.
Yeah.
It's. What?
On hour basis, you pray. Every hour.
Yeah. Yeah, some people do. I did a high level version.
A lot of the hard disk I use if you pack it hourly.
Okay, next.
Hi, two questions. How easy
it
is...
Can you step closer to the microphone so I can hear you? Thank you.
Let's say by mistake someone did a content database name wrong on the SharePoint when they're creating a content database.
Okay.
How easy it is to change that?
The steps are, okay, so I've got, if I don't have this other blog out there, I will shortly, because I've already written it, I just got to have that. But the steps I use to rename the central admin can be used for also moving any content database or renaming any content database. It doesn't have to be central admin.
Okay.
If it's not out there, I will get it out there in the next week, so you have those steps.
Okay, another quick question. When you're doing a SQL 2.12 install and you had the collation setting wrong there and nothing done at the SharePoint side, do you again have to reinstall on the SQL Server side? Or is
that's what I would do.
Okay.
Because you can't go in the model and set it there.
Sure.
It'll look like it's going to, and it'll come up. It's like, this is a system database. You can't do that. I would just do the install over. If you want to dedicate that to SharePoint, I would just do the install over.
Okay.
If it's clean.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Just a quick question about DR and database moving.
Okay. So you've got 2012 now, and you're trying to, or you have 8 now, R2. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I would take advantage of high available, and they're improving on that in 2014, the next release of SQL Server. So if you can start using that now and get on that bandwagon, I would do that. I know. Yes, sir. Don't go anywhere.
Hi. You're talking about the recovery model.
I'm sorry. Could you come up here?
Okay.
It's probably just a little easier. Yeah. So it should pick them up, whatever model. The databases I just created, we can go look at those. Oh, yeah, the service app. Yeah, I would say, come on. With the service applications, yes, with some of those, that's a little different. primarily we were talking about content databases for apps, is what I was, yes. And you're right, some of them you don't need to worry about at all, and it's probably a plus for them to be in simple recovery, you know, like TempDB, even in at the system level.